Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. So happy to have you along today. You know, one of the joys of seeing a lovely garden is getting ideas for things you'd like to do on your own, no matter what the season. And there are still some things you could do with your garden this time of the year, you know, whether it's the end of the year or the beginning of the year. It's cold. It's going to be cold, and it's going to probably be a little snowy out there. And Ben Feuda says, you know what? We can do some things. And he likes the color brown. Brown is good in the garden, he says. He's the director of Allen Centennial Gardens, an active member of the American Public Gardens Association. He's written for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. And Ben, great to have you with us. Welcome.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
You have, tell us about your background. You're relatively new to the Allen Centennial Gardens. You know, when is it, May?
Yes.
Last May?
Yes. I arrived here in May, and I like to say it's been a roller coaster ever since. We've been incredibly busy in the garden. It's been a very exciting year for us. We've introduced a lot of new programming, new events, in addition to just being horticulturists and taking care of the garden. So my background, I've been in public horticulture for, about 6 or 7 years now going on. And public horticulture specifically is working in public gardens. So gardens like the Allen Centennial Garden, the Chicago Botanic Garden, for example, any garden that is open to the public and provides inspiration and education to visitors. And I have an absolute passion for connecting people to plants, and so it's been just wonderful being here.
Oh, that's great. And you have favorite plants or favorite types of plants you like to work with?
Oh, it's that question's always like asking which of your 3,000 children do you like the most. But my personal interest is with herbaceous perennials in particular. Those are really my interest.
Well, you encourage people to remember that brown is a color, too. What about the benefits of having some brown in your garden?
Well, I like to say that when you begin to look at brown as a color, it no longer is just brown. It becomes sand and taupe and sepia and silver and terracotta and black and silver. And when you can begin to see those very late season colors in the garden, there's amazing possibilities that open up with these really late season colors. It really can be a very stunning landscape, not just as far as color is concerned, but as far as texture as well.
You can join in, too, as you listen to me talk with our guest today, Ben Feuda of the Allen Centennial Gardens. I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've got a gardening or plant question. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. So give us a call, shoot us an email, or get on our Facebook page. And if you've got a nice photo, gardening photo, either from earlier or in the season or from right now, I hope you'll post that up on our Facebook page. You know, I probably should have asked right away. Many of our listeners are quite familiar with the Allen Centennial Gardens, but for those who aren't, talk about the gardens a bit.
Sure. So the Allen Centennial Garden is the public garden and living classroom of the UW-Madison Horticulture Department, but we are really here for the entire campus and community. We aren't just for one department or one demographic. We are open dawn to dusk all year. We have no admission, so you are free to visit at any time. The best time to really visit if you're not a student is on the weekends. Parking is free here on campus, so any of the parking lots or garages nearby are the best places. But otherwise, we are about 2.5 acres, but we are an incredibly densely packed 2.5 acres.
Yeah.
So I personally count about 27 themed garden spaces that we have on display. And again, those evolve and change over time, as any good garden will. And some really exciting things we're working on for next year. We have some really great events coming up, but also, again, some really great plans for the garden as well. Do I have a second to talk about a couple of our events?
You bet.
Awesome. So first, I'd like to mention our winter classes. This is a series that we offer for our members and volunteers. They are free for our members, and we have 6 lined up this year with experts from both UW-Madison and the community on any a range of topics relating to horticulture, anything from, again, brown as a color too. I'll be presenting that one, to hearing from a Chinese herbalist, and also, you know, just the basics of soil science. So we're covering lots of different topics. We also have a really great symposium coming up on April 2nd, and this is the first ever event we're doing like this, and this is in collaboration with our friends group, which supports the garden. We're bringing in three high-profile industry leaders from the public garden realm to talk about the artful garden. And these three folks are going to be looking at sort of how do you put plants together in an artful way, looking at planting design in particular, but also looking at how do we garden in an age of climate change and uncertain weather conditions, and what do our gardens of the future really look like. So it's going to be a full-day event, and we're really looking forward to presenting that.
Oh, it's really cool. And I know there's other things as well. I've got some callers online. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. We'll talk some more about your role and the garden, but let's go to Joy in West Bend for now. Joy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I don't have a question about winter beauty, but I do want to agree with the guest that there is a wonder, there is awe to behold as the seasons change, and there's different kinds of browns and different shades of browns, so... Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
My question is about our peach tree. We have a couple of peach trees protected on the south side of our garage. And this year in general, we've had so much wind. This summer, the wind and the weight of the fruit made a couple of branches actually split. So... First we propped them up, you know, and we tied it together, and then the second time the wind came along, it was really split seriously. So we thought, well, we're going to tie these branches up, and my husband put duct tape at the joint that was open in hopes that it would hold the branch together to ripen the fruit, and that did happen. We had good produce. We had really good peaches this summer. And I'm just wondering if we need to leave that duct tape on forever, or if we can take it off and see if there's healing underneath, or if we're going to deprive the plant of oxygen by leaving it on. You know, what are possibilities here?
All right.
Well, Joy, it shouldn't be a long-term problem. Once it's healed, you should be able to take that duct tape off. And again, in hindsight being 20/20, but my recommendation, if it were to happen again, is to choose a binding material that can breathe. We really want to encourage the exchange of gases through the wound site. So something like a paper wrapping or something that they use in orchards similar to that would be probably the best bet. The duct tape, it probably did the job. If it's been on there for a few months and the split wasn't too severe, that tree has probably knitted itself back together. But if when you take it off, I would be very careful, maybe hold the pieces together just to make sure it doesn't re-split. And once it's fully healed, that area should be quite strong and shouldn't have issues in the future. But I think the most important thing is to look for a material that breathes in grafting those pieces together, and to do it soon after that split occurs, because once it starts to heal and form a callus at the wound site, the possibility of grafting it back together is less possible.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thanks, Joy, for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Give us a call. Let's go back to that whole concept of brown again. What is it? How do we do that? How do we achieve that in our gardens?
Well, I think the first step is we have to expand our horizons as gardeners a little bit. There's sort of a mentality, I think, in horticulture, especially that I've experienced here in the United States in general, that says in October, November, cut everything down and remove it. And that's sort of been what we've been told from some point, and that's what we're used to doing. But what I would challenge you to consider is that there's no mechanism in nature that, like clockwork, rolls through in November and removes this plant material. These plants, first of all, are used to growing in their own debris. They're used to having these stalks up through snow and winter and frost. So before we even talk about the aesthetics, the plants evolve to do this. They want to be left up over winter. It's a mechanism for them For example, if they have seed pods that are attractive to birds, not only can you attract birds to your landscape by leaving up the seed heads of things like echinacea, but it also provides a mechanism for that echinacea to spread its seeds over the winter. It also helps to insulate the plant crown by leaving that material up. So if it has a really hard winter, that extra bit of decomposing greenery around the base is a good thing. And also, mornings like this, we had a fairly hard frost this morning. When we get back to the aesthetics of this style of gardening, it's an amazing thing to walk out in the morning and see all of these seed heads and forms just encrusted with frost. It's a really stunning sight to see, and just adds a new dimension to your garden, and you can enjoy the garden in fall. You don't have to feel rushed to clean everything up. You can just let it. Part of this is about embracing the cycles of life and just allowing nature to do what she does naturally.
And we have more callers online. I really appreciate your call. Ben Fuda, our guest today, new director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, also an active member of the American Public Gardens Association. And he's written for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine as well, so it's really cool to have him with us. Again, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Mary Lou in Fitchburg, we'll give you a chance next. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks. We just moved into this house, and I have a lilac, and it's pretty old, and it is not producing any of the new growth from the ground. I mean, I've had lilacs all my life, and so I'm really reluctant to prune it back. I know you're supposed to take a third every year of the old growth, but it's not producing any new stuff from the ground. So I don't know what to do about it.
If it is, my thought, if it's a very old specimen, it may just be sort of nearing the end of its life in that case. And one thing to do, if you'd really like to preserve that, you could try that one-third rule. That is sort of the rule of thumb. And if that doesn't successfully regenerate any material, the next thing, if you really want to preserve that, would probably be maybe taking some cuttings and starting some new plants.
Okay. Yeah, it bloomed very nicely last year. It looks really healthy. But I was just kind of worried that it's not producing any new stuff. So,
If it's not doing it yet, that's probably okay. If it hasn't been thinned, it probably hasn't had an incentive to do so. So maybe this winter, try thinning out maybe that third and see what happens in the spring.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right at the base.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Ben Fuda, our guest today. Brandy Funk, our on-air producer for Garden Talk, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here for this edition of Garden Talk, visiting with Ben Fuda, a new garden director at Allen Centennial Gardens. Join in at 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. And Kristen in De Pere up next with a question. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks guys. Two quick questions. My first question, we're expecting a nice weekend up here in Green Bay, and I'm wondering if it's too late to plant bulbs. My second question is, we've got a wetlands in our backyard that is full of milkweed pods, and the seeds are still in them, and there's another pond that's also in our backyard. What's the best way to transfer the milkweed seeds to the pond so we can start growing some of the milkweed over by the pond as well?
Well, for the first question about bulbs, I think as long as the ground is not frozen, it's fair game. They will do their growing over the winter once they're in the ground, and the sooner they get in, obviously, the better. But we've been lucky this year, so things aren't quite frozen yet. As far as the milkweed seeds, probably the best thing to do would be to take those pods with the ripe seeds in them and sort of just scatter the seeds with their little tufts in the area you'd like them to grow in. And it's actually a good thing to do that right about now. They need a little bit of that cold, wet cycle that we'll get over winter to prepare the seeds to grow in the spring. So the best treatment is just to put them right where you'd like them to be. And making sure that there's a little exposed soil just so they can get some light and get a good start in spring would be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What we've done in the past is we've kind of taken them out and kind of just shoved them under the grass so they don't blow away.
Those little tufts will probably, they may move a little bit, but they'll, wherever they want to be, they'll sort of find that place. Under the grass may be a little challenging for them because they're going to need a little bit of a light source to jumpstart them in spring. So if there's any areas of exposed soil, or even if you just rake aside, doesn't have to be a large spot at all, just even a little patch of soil for them to get warmed up in the spring, that'll help.
But you don't want to bury them.
Correct. They can be right on the soil surface.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. You gotta help those monarchs.
Absolutely.
All right. Absolutely. Thanks, Christine. Appreciate your call. And Mary in Roscoe, Illinois, up next. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for having this talk on. I'm bewildered. I have a 7-year-old dwarf sour cherry tree, and this is the first year that I have had problems with an infestation of some sort of fruit fly. When I harvest the cherry, there's a one larva, next to the stone inside the cherry. And I garden organically. Everything that I've read says spray methylon or something of that effect on the tree. And I don't want to eat fruit that has all kinds of chemical on it. Please help.
Okay. Well, it's always a little more difficult, or often more difficult, when you've got when you don't want to apply or use any chemicals. So
I will if I absolutely have to. I'm not completely opposed to it, but I've got a neighbor that's catty corner from me that leaves rotting fruit on the ground. I try very hard not to do that.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the particular worm is, and that makes a difference in what you might do from an organic basis.
Okay.
I mean, there are times. Are these small trees?
They are the sour cherry themselves are no more bigger than a quarter. The tree is about 16 feet tall.
Okay.
About 10 feet in diameter. She's real short and fat. And the bug that I have seen on it that is flying around, I've identified it with the spots on the wings. It's a very small fruit fly type of thing. It's bigger than like a sewer fly. When I looked it up online, it looks very much like the Western fruit fly.
Okay.
And we're planting this spring. From what I read, the larvae lay in mature fruit, so it is suggested that you pick it early. And in the spring, we are going to rake up all the mulch, because if I've missed any cherries on the ground, the larvae will
They'll be in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they go to ground and then emerge as an adult, ready to do more damage. So we're raking up all the mulch. We're gonna re-burn that and remulch with clean. And I don't know what else to do other than pick the fruit when it's not ripe.
I think what you should probably do, what you're doing, the right things. Is what wouldn't you say, Ben?
Yes, definitely.
So I think you're already doing the right things. If it persists next year and you have it this coming year, then you've got to get you've got to be able to for sure identify the insect that's causing the problem. And if you've got a photo of the insect or the insect itself to send to the insect diagnostic lab.
Okay.
The University of Wisconsin Insect Diagnostic Lab does recommend control measures for various types of insects.
Wonderful! Okay,
and they'll recommend organic methods if there are organic methods or whatever they might be. You've got pretty large trees, so for example, you wouldn't, you know, if they were dwarf trees and really true dwarfs, you'd be able to add some, you know, even put a netting over it. But that's not going to work for your trees.
No.
So you're doing the right things, and I would just only add, make sure if they're back again next year, make sure you get some identification of them, and then get them to the insect diagnostic lab for their recommendations.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And Ben, you're not a an insect or a disease guy.
No, I go to the insect lab myself. So if I have a question, I go to them.
Oh, yeah. What do you most like talking about?
Really, my passion is planting design and, again, garden design in particular, but really seeing the ornament of the plant, but also, you know, color is great, and colors in design is the first step, but thinking about how gardens can work ecologically, and I love that the last caller was looking for organic methods and sort of integrated pest management to the problem, and I think there's a lot of ways that we can integrate those practices in gardens.
You can join in, too, with your questions. Open lines get you on pretty quickly. The number to call 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. What were some of the plants from Allen this year that were particularly good and beautiful? Do you have any that you If you're going to recommend for, say, a home gardener, that would come to mind?
Mm-hmm. Oh, this year we had exceptional success with lots of different kales. Worked very well for us. We also used salvia, Golden Delicious, which is an annual salvia, but the smell of the leaves when crushed is just spectacular, and it doesn't bloom until very late in the season. We'd sort of given up on it, but come August, it was just covered in a profusion of red flowers and an absolute hummingbird magnet. They loved it, and the contrast of the red flowers against that chartreuse foliage was really wonderful.
Oh, so that's one for sure that you'd that you'd recommend. All right, anything new on the horizon? Have you seen some? The flower books and the garden books and all that are. Magazines are coming out right about now.
A few things we'll be looking at for the garden, both short and long term, is trying to include some cultivars of native species. And for us in particular, this is, I think, critical because, a lot of people may be averse to planting a meadow or prairie recreation in their lawn simply for its lack of maybe ornamental value, but some of these new native cultivars are either dwarf or more compact, and while there's more research that I think still needs to happen as far as if they have the same benefits to native pollinators, these new cultivars, but from an ornamental perspective, if you want a little bit want some of these species, there are some interesting things we'll be trialing, some new introductions from local nurseries that I look forward to seeing what happens.
Yeah, and that's one of the great things about the garden, I think. And somebody wondered, by the way, where's the garden located? It's on Babcock Drive, but explain.
Yes, we are at 620 Babcock Drive, so we are just off the Lakeshore Path near Lake Mendota. And again, we're just a hop, skip, and a jump down from Babcock Dairy Hall, so you can visit the garden and get some ice cream at the same time.
Yeah, it's a great location, and it's right near one of my offices in the Department of Life Sciences Communication, so I see the garden virtually every day. Scott and Hayward up with a question. Scott, hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Yes. So we have a couple of chokeberry bushes that have had bumper crops in the past couple of years, except this past summer. There was almost nothing. Some of the wild things, the choke cherries that we have growing around and the wild blackberries, they were all down this year. And I just wondered if something happened this past spring or something that might have hurt that crop.
It's hard to know specifically what it might. Some of these things just ebb and flow. There's years where they'll have bumper crops and others, whether it's climate related or the after a bumper year, sometimes the fruit trees especially will sort of scale back a little.
They'll
take a rest, yep.
And sometimes it depends on, you've got what happens when you've got your trees flowering.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a cold snap or maybe you don't get any rain, or there's all kinds of things that can happen at that point that then affects what your produce is going to be, and especially if you get a cold snap,
mm-hmm.
which is not unlikely in Hayward. I know Hayward very well. So that it may have been something that happened last spring that you weren't even kind of aware. Those buds might have gotten a cold snap that would have created problems. So I wouldn't worry. I try now this next year. You know, if you had a kind of a light year this year, you might be looking at a good year this coming year.
That sounds good.
Yeah, we'll be. We've got to be positive.
Apple trees, yes,
I know apple trees go year to year, on and off. So maybe that's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, and I had a horticulturist on one time who said he took a baseball bat to his tree when it wasn't producing, and he whacked it a few times and shocked it into produced more fruits after the fact. And that kind of goes along with what sometimes people will do is they'll scar or they'll make a cut part way around the into the bark of the tree to sort of shock the tree into wanting to produce fruit because it is in some stress.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another, I wouldn't do that yet, but that's another possibility down the road, Scott. Thanks a lot for calling. Joan in Madison has a comment. Hi, Joan. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks. I was calling about the lady with the cherry fruit fly issue. I'm well acquainted with that thing, and it's the spotted-winged Drosophila.
Okay.
And Michelle Goudot and the UW insect place would certainly like to know about that. They're tracking it within the state, and the lady's UW Extension office, she should probably let them aware of what's going on, too. But the way she described it is definitely the spotted-winged Drosophila. And I'm sure, well, you've had many people talk about that in your program.
Yeah.
So, it's the two spots on the male fly that she described there. And there are cultural practices as well as, like we said, is she's doing it right. The neighbor needs to do that also.
Yeah.
And also there are organic sprays and conventional sprays, but you've got to rotate those around so that they don't get a climate or acclimated to that specific spray. But there is a program. There's cultural practices, like I said, and organic sprays she can use. But she can look that up online, too.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Joan, thank you so much for bringing that up. I'm really glad you did. And I think, if the Insect Diagnostic Lab is really clued in with all the other extension offices and with the horticulturists throughout the state and actually throughout the region. So it's a good way to do it is just to get in touch with them. Mm-hmm. And they have on their site, actually, there's a lot of information about that. So thank you so much.
Yep. And actually that fruit fly lays its eggs in there when the fruit is turning. It's not when it's ripe. It's when it's turning.
That's why they talk about picking it early.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And letting it ripen.
And then refrigerate it,
yep.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks, Larry.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Joan. Appreciate the call. You know, that's one of the nice things about Garden Talk. We have a lot of folks out there with a lot of great experience, so if we don't know the answer, somebody else may well know the answer. Well, you may have a question, and if you do, I hope you'll join in. We've got open lines. Get you on right now at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page, titled The Larry Mueller Show. And certainly if you want to post a photo, maybe you got a garden photo, we'd love to see that as well. It's always fun to have a chance to look at those photos. You got a lot of really good gardeners across the whole state of Wisconsin. Hey, Ben, are you a houseplant guy? Do you spend a lot of time on houseplants?
Oh, I don't. Those are, if it doesn't go dormant, I don't usually want to deal with it. I do have a staghorn fern in my apartment right now, which has been doing quite well for about a year. But again, that's about a once a week minimal maintenance. So That's about the extent that I get.
What kind of work do you do in the garden, in the Allen Centennial Garden now, or what are you planning to do through the rest of the winter season?
Well, winter in particular is a wonderful time to breathe for mm-hmm. us. We take some good time to think about our designs for next year. We are in the midst of putting together our plant orders and sort of, again, thinking about what it is we want to do next year. Our garden theme for 2016 is medicinal plants, so we are working on some programming and some interpretation and trying to find some really interesting species to exhibit that sort of tie into the beauty and science of medicinal plants. And again, just a lot of planning. We have an ambitious program calendar coming up, so we are working hard on putting things together. And another thing to mention is that on the weekend of February 19th and 20th, so that's a Friday and Saturday, we are putting on a new event that we're calling Luminous. So this is an opportunity to experience the garden by illuminated light. This is not your maybe traditional Christmas show. There will not be twinkle lights and, mm-hmm. and sort of gaudy colors. This is about sort of embracing the serenity of winter and seeing a garden at its bones and when it's at its most quiet. So guests can walk the paths guided by, nice luminaries, and our interns and volunteers are putting together some interesting displays of these luminaries as well throughout the garden. So it'll be an interesting experience for us. But again, that's happening in late February.
And, of course, in the evening.
In the evening, yes. Yeah. Which here happens about 4:30. So.
Yeah, it's pretty. In February, that's about right, as a matter of fact. And Olbrich Botanical Gardens in mm-hmm. Madison, this last fall, had a kind of a similar
yes,
approach.
Yes.
And it was very, very...
It was wonderful. It was beautiful.
Wonderful. And so I'm really looking forward to this, the 19th and 20th. Will there be a small fee to get in, or is it...
Nope, this will be free and open. We'll have a couple of maybe little bonfires and fire pits for warming stations and maybe some hot cocoa, but otherwise it will be free to come through and wander and experience the garden in winter by luminary.
Oh, that's going to be... I'm marking that on my calendar.
Excellent.
I'm not going to miss that. Cass in Appleton, thanks a lot for calling. What can we do for you?
Good morning. I'd like to find out if I could grow olive trees here in Wisconsin, considering the cold and all that stuff, and what you recommend.
I have never, unless inside. Mm-hmm.
If inside, I'm guessing it would have to probably be an indoor plant to be successful here. Outdoors, I mean, it could go outside during the summer, but it would have to come indoors during the winter, I would guess.
Yeah.
It has to be potted then.
Yeah, it would have to be potted. And it would, I don't think, I've never heard of an olive tree.
Yeah, that would be a first if I ever did it.
Yeah, yes, I'm here in Wisconsin. So yeah. It is something you can have in a, you know, like having a pot, but uh-huh. otherwise, and I'm not so sure, you know, I don't know, it's an olive tree, but whether there'd be any olives involved would be another matter too.
And something else to consider, maybe pollinators. I don't know olives well enough whether they need another plant to pollinate with or they're self-pollinating. So that would be one tree may not do it for you.
Yeah. Although if they're like a lime tree, I've got Limey mm-hmm. who produces limes galore, all on her own. Well, I when I walk by the flowers, I usually blow or I'll mm-hmm. put a little breeze. To sort of move things around on the plant, but that's about it. Kathy in Viroqua has a question. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Last year, when I thought I needed to plant milkweed to help the monarchs, all of a sudden in my garden, there were the milkweed plants. This year, again, there they are, and I've only seen one or two monarchs in flying around my garden, and never have I seen any caterpillars. Is that typical?
Yeah.
You know, I have almost the same situation, Kathy.
Uh-huh.
In my garden, I had, suddenly there were some milkweeds, and I thought, oh, I'll just let them go. And I only observed two monarch butterflies
mm-hmm.
around, and I knew they'd been eaten. The leaves were chewed, and I knew there'd been some action there, but I never saw a larva. So,
I would say keep it up and encourage that colony to grow. Probably the larger the colony of milkweed, the more likely it is that monarchs will find it. They if they can see a bigger area, chances are more will be drawn in. So the more that you can enhance that plant colony, probably the better your chances of seeing those larvae will be. One or two plants, again, you may get a larva or two, but the larger the stand, the more successful it'll be.
Yeah, but I would certainly wouldn't give up on it. No.
Oh no, not at all. Definitely.
So I have some land that is vacant, and can I bring then the pods and the seeds from my garden milkweeds and leave them on the ground, like you were saying earlier, and so I can start milkweed there if it's not growing there already?
Sure. I think that would be great. And again, making sure there's just a little bit of exposed soil so they can get a little bit of sunlight in early spring. But once they're up and rolling, they will take off.
Otherwise, I was thinking maybe I need to bring in a different species or whatever of milkweed.
It probably wouldn't hurt to have a few other plants that are nectar plants for the adults, but the milkweed are the larval plants for the monarch. So, you know, any other native species were probably good choices. We had some Liatris ligulostylus, which is a mouthful, but Liatris ligulostylus at the Allen Garden this summer, and those were we had maybe a cluster of 10 plants, and we counted upwards of 6 to 7 monarchs at a time on those when they were blooming daily.
Oh, nice.
They were an absolute magnet, and again, they aren't a larval plant, but they are a very attractive nectar plant.
And what is that name?
Liatris ligulostylus.
So Liatris, L-I-A-T-R-U-S?
T-R-I-S.
T-R-I-S.
Mm-hmm. And then the ligulostylus, it sounds like that's a mouthful to spell. And I don't know the common name right offhand. But I believe, let me think. Yeah, ligulostylus, I think, is the Latin for that one.
Could you have this on your Facebook?
Brandy's going to post it up on our. She's looking it up right now. She'll have it up on our Facebook page in a minute, probably.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Kat.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call and the question. And boy, with more callers online, that's great. Ron coming up next, and Stephen and Liz. All of you will have a chance here. I'm Larry Mueller. Ben Fuda, our guest today, garden director of Allen Centennial Gardens. Brandy Funk, our on-air producer here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us on this edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller with Ben Fuda of the Allen Centennial Gardens on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. It's a wonderful garden. We have a link on our Facebook page. So if you go to our Facebook page, the title is The Larry Mueller Show, and right in the middle of the page, you're going to see a link to the Allen Centennial Gardens and the website, which is really a pretty one. What's the history? You got a little brief history of the Allen Gardens?
Sure. So the garden itself in its present iteration is just about 26 years old. The prior teaching gardens were located near the Plant Sciences Building and had to be relocated when the building expanded a few decades ago. So this garden evolved out of that change. And one thing that really draws people to the site is the Dean's Residence, which is a historic mansion on site. And that was the home of the first dean for the College of Ag and Life Sciences. And today it's under renovation to become a student center. So it should open in the next year and a half or so.
And so it's been around for a while, and I can tell you I've been around long enough to know the other garden, and this is a much improvement mm-hmm. over the, and I think anybody from the Department of Horticulture would say the exact same thing, that this is a much improvement over what was what did exist 20 years ago, so or 25 years ago. So that's great. And right on the campus, on the Ag College end of the campus. And the nice thing, if you come on a weekend, the beauty, actually right across the street is parking.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to go very far. You can just kind of walk right in. And that's a real advantage as well, especially if you go on a weekend. Ron in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Hi, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I have a couple questions. My father used to always trim down the rose bushes practically, you know, just so no more than maybe a couple of inches left on the stems. he'd do the same thing with our hedge. And I just wonder, is that really the proper thing to do to rose bushes? I have three of them. I just planted one recently, and I seems a bit harsh to do that.
Yeah.
Yes. For roses, they're a little bit tricky as far as long-term maintenance, but the key thing to look for in yearly pruning is to try and remove the oldest canes. So anything, and you can even tell in late winter, these old canes may look sort of gray and silver and a little lifeless compared to the younger shoots, which are probably have some more color to them. And this will help to keep the plant, again, fresh and vigorous. And again, there I would recommend consulting, maybe look doing a little more research online, maybe as far as rose pruning, because again, it is sort of a, I want to say it's a little bit of a juggling act. There's no super easy rule of thumb, but definitely removing those old canes is the way to go. But they don't need to be cut down every year, and that probably would, I think, stunt their bloom.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Liz in Fitchburg, it's your turn. Hi, Liz.
Hi. Good morning, Larry, and good morning, Ben. It's Liz Morrison from Dogs on Call calling.
Good morning.
Hi. I didn't know that when I talked to you per email this morning, Ben, that I'd be talking to you per phone. I just want to say that Ben has done a wonderful job with the Allen Centennial Gardens. He invited our pet therapy group, Dogs on Call, in to visit with the students in the garden this past fall, and we just scheduled a date for the spring, and we're really excited to combine the pups and the plants next spring. It'll be a lot of fun.
You know, that is a lot of fun, and Dogs on Call, and there's a nice photo on your Facebook page, as
absolutely.
A matter of fact, of some of the students around, with the dogs, and that's a really nice program, Liz. We have in my other building at Hiram Smith Hall, we've been fortunate enough to have Dogs on Call there, and it's always been a lot of fun.
Yes, well, we really appreciate Ben reaching out to us and planning this with us, because it's a perfect setting for the students to walk through the gardens and see how beautiful they are, rather than just walking by and thinking they're going to go in another time. So
yeah.
The dogs kind of helped this past fall to bring the students in, and we just had a lot of fun. But thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Liz. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Liz. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. That it really is a nice program. Dogs on Call has been in several buildings on campus, but I think she's exactly right. What better place?
And we're really the date she mentioned for next spring is Friday, May 6th. Mark your calendars now, because that actually is also National Public Garden Day. So this is one of hopefully a few programs we'll be offering to get people into public art. Exactly what she said. We want to expose them to what public gardens are, what it is that we do, and I think what better way than combining those pups and plants. And again, of all of our events that we tried out this fall, this was our, I would say, most successful as far as attendance. We had 600 students in about an hour and a half.
Oh,
so we were very busy, but again, we're really looking forward to doing it again, and it was a great success.
Oh, all right. Thanks again, Liz. Appreciate it. Stephanie in Fitchburg. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you and Ben know that there is another illumination show. Our Wisconsin Hardy Plant Society had a bus trip down there this past week, and while I was not able to go, it's at the Morton Arboretum, and I heard nothing but positive remarks about it. So you might listeners know there's another place they can go visit.
Yeah, thank you so much. And you're familiar with the Morton Arboretum.
I am. Man. And I saw their illumination show in its first season a couple of years ago. And it is, I think, one of the best public garden light shows I've ever seen. It's interactive. They ask you to engage with the plant, their collection, through light, and it's a fantastic experience. I would highly recommend a visit.
And now, where's the Morton Arboretum located?
So they're in Lisle, Illinois. So I believe maybe about 2 hours ish, give or take, from here, depending on traffic.
From Madison.
So a quick trip, and again, very much worth. You can do it in a day. So.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Stephanie, thank you so much. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Joan in Hayward. Hi, Joan. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I hope you don't mind if we go back to the milkweed. The
sure.
lady asked about whether she should plant different kinds of milkweed.
Yep.
And I actually work for the Park Service, and so I did a little research on this. And we, when we looked it up online with milkweed, you want to stick to the local milkweeds. You don't want to bring in other milkweeds from other areas, because I was shocked to find out that a lot of people are planting tropical milkweed, and while the monarchs love it, it carries diseases.
Oh.
So up here in northern Wisconsin, we have common milkweed, and that just pops up everywhere. And like you, I just let it grow in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me happy when I see people in the city just letting it grow in their yard.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have swamp milkweed also, which obviously grows in the swamps and smells really nice, too. And you down in Madison, maybe you have different kind of milkweeds. I don't really know. But anyway, you want to stick to the local milkweeds mm-hmm. of your area. And as you and she observed, they will spread on their own. All we have to do is let them grow.
Absolutely.
Yeah absolutely. Very. And the common milkweed is common throughout the entire
right,
state of Wisconsin.
Exactly.
Which is probably why they call it the common milkweed.
Probably, yeah.
Joan, thank you. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
So much.
Have
for,
a great day.
Yeah, you as well. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call. We have, and before, and you can join in too, by the way, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Nancy in Watertown next. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. With this wacky weather, I am wondering how to deal with my garlic bed in particular, other bulb things that are not frozen. They can't cover them to keep them frozen, so that, you know, I'm worried about rotting with the, you know, thawing, freezing, not draining good.
Yeah.
They certainly got wet over the weekend.
Yeah.
The thawing and freezing, and even if we do get some rain, my concern would be more of just making sure it has good drainage. So even if it gets wet frequently, as long as it has an opportunity to dry out and there's no standing water, that's probably the most important thing. If they're in a raised bed or, again, and have any kind of sandy drainage, they'll probably be okay. But if it's more clay soil, as far as what we can do right now, probably not too much. The best thing would be to have a quick draining garden bed, and maybe next year looking into, again, a raised bed system might be the best way for those types of things going forward.
But if it's not standing water...
Right, standing water would be the worst thing. As long as it's draining through, you shouldn't have a problem.
All right.
So just let everything thaw and freeze, and
yep.
I don't know, I had them covered to try to keep them
yep.
frozen.
Yeah.
They should be fine.
Yeah, they should be okay. Thanks, Nancy. Thank you very much for calling. We have other callers. Peggy from Fort Atkinson actually emailed, and she wondered about grasses. What are your favorite grasses for when you think about winter interest?
Oh, I love this question. grasses are one of my favorite plants, especially for, again, this winter interest. And one in particular that doesn't get used, I think, enough and is starting to become a little bit more available in the trade is moorgrass. That's M-O-O-R. And specifically purple moorgrass. And the Latin name on that is Molinia. And there's a lot of different varieties, but the one in particular that if you can find it, it's the one I think that's the best, is called Transparent, is the cultivar. Molinias form a sort of small tuft of greenery, maybe 18 to 24 inches tall when they're fully mature. And in probably mid-summer, they throw up these huge, airy, big, I don't want to say plumes, but again, the name Transparent implies you can see through this plant.
Oh, wow.
And the seed heads are probably, when it's totally in bloom, I'd say between, it's taller, about 7 feet, 6 to 7 feet when they're fully happy and in place. But again, it doesn't feel bulky like the miscanthus that we typically see. That's more ubiquitous. And the other reason, not only is the form of are these beautiful, they're sort of vase shaped and just really elegant, but their fall color is unbeatable. I've never seen a grass with fall color like this. They turn absolutely iridescent butter gold, and they hold that through December and probably into about early January. Now, when we start to have heavier snows or wet snows, they probably will get knocked down. They usually are in a pile by March, but for November, December, maybe early January, they are just an exceptional grass. And again, that's purple moorgrass and Millennia transparent.
Purple moorgrass and Brandy Funk. Maybe you can put. Yeah, she's looking it up. Maybe you can find a photo, Brandy, our on-air producer. If you can find a photo of that, we'll post that up on our Facebook page so you can get a look at it. Boy, it sounds just absolutely.
And once it's established, it has a very beefy root system. So put it someplace where you'd like it to stay for a while, but it's not a thug. It doesn't really reseed, and it is, again, once established, drought tolerant. Just you could beat it up, and it's a pretty durable plant.
So purple moorgrass transparent.
Mm-hmm. Transparent is the cultivar.
Mm-hmm. Is the cultivar. And then we had another question. Any other grasses besides that one?
There's a few others for winter interest in particular that are coming on the market right now. Some big blue stem cultivars, and these are coming from Intrinsic Perennial Gardens, Intrinsic Perennial Nursery in Hebron, Illinois. They're a wholesale grower, but they're starting to introduce a lot of these, and they have these incredible red colors to them. They are just, I think one's called Bull's Blood or something like that, or October Red. So I don't know the exact cultivars offhand, but again, they're native grass, so they're very well adapted to our region. They get maybe 6 to 7 feet tall. They will need a little bit of support because they're more of a native grass, but again, the fall color, I think, is unbeatable. And another, again, an introduction from them is called, it's a little blue stem, which, again, a lot of us are familiar with who know our natives. Schizocarium is the Latin name, but the cultivar is Jazz. And the great thing about Jazz is that it's upright. A lot of the little blue stems, once they bloom, are kind of top-heavy and flop over. Again, they're used to growing in a prairie with plants to support them on either side. Jazz stays upright, and when it blooms, they're just these little white tufts up and down a stem, and it glows when it's backlit by the sun. It's a spectacular shorter stature grass.
Ben Feuda, our guest today. Ben is the garden director of Allen Centennial Gardens, active member of the American Public Gardens Association, and our guest for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nice to have you along for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. A lovely garden can really transport you, can be very relaxing. And if you're a gardener, you know there's a lot of work that goes on in creating and maintaining that special place. Even this time of the year, there are things that you could do to bring some beauty to your garden. And certainly as you think about it, or maybe things to do this coming spring that will allow you next winter to have a really beautiful garden as well. Ben Feuda, our guest today, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens. He's an active member of the American Public Gardens Association and is ready and willing to answer your gardening questions. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Ben, again, thanks for taking time to be with us.
Happy to be here.
Appreciate it very much. Again, you can join him at Open Lines. We'll get you on really quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Jane wondered, posted a question on Facebook. She says, my husband has a few grape plants. Not sure of the variety. They grow bountiful leaves, but don't flower or bear fruit. What are your suggestions?
My first thought might be to look at the pruning regimen for these. So going back to the comment about the cherries earlier in terms of putting the plant under a little bit of stress to help promote them to flower and fruit is one thing to consider. So if these are plants that haven't been pruned in a while, grapes can be beat up.
Yeah, maybe cut way back.
They can take a lot of abuse. And again, that's, again, I'm not an expert in this necessarily. I would look to consult a little bit deeper, but pruning would be the first thing I'd think of.
We have an excellent UW Extension publication titled, I think, Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. And it does go into the pruning and how to do it. And I know a friend of mine, I've told this story before, had a situation very much like yours, and suggested that publication, and he got it, and his really turned his whole crop around. And the next year, he had all kinds of grapes. So you go to the learningstore.uwex.edu. I think we've got a link to it on our Facebook page, but go to the UW Extension Learning Store. You'll find that publication, and you can copy it off for free if you want to, right off the website. Gary in Fort Atkinson has a question. Gary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hello. Just wondering, I got a fertilizer spreader that I use on my lawn, and it's a broadcast for dry granular fertilizer, and I went around the corner and it tipped over. Okay, so I tried to rake it up and shovel it up as much as I could, but I can now not get grass to grow there at all, and it's been 2 years. And I think the blend was 25.08, if I remember right. Is there anything I can put on it to neutralize that so I can get the grass to come back again?
Water.
Lots of water.
You get the hose out there, and about the only thing you're going to be able to do to that really is, aside from digging it up, you could dig it up, and then, actually, if you dug it up and then just had it and sort of spread it out over the lawn, it'd probably be just fine as long as you weren't clumping it. But then the other way to do it is just to get your hose out there and let the hose run, obviously, when it'll run the spring.
It's been 2 years.
It'll hang there. There was potassium, so it was no phosphorus in it, but you had a lot of nitrogen.
Okay.
And you had a fair amount of potassium, too, so.
Okay, so if I dig down with a shovel and just dig this spot out and put fresh topsoil in, how far down do I have to dig, do you think?
6-8 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all you're going to have to do. You could take that soil. I mean, if it's spread out, it's going to be, it's just going to be high in nitrogen for sure.
Okay.
And potassium, if you're worried about that, you could just get rid of it too. But I mean, if you literally spread it out like you might sand, it would be providing a nice some kick of nutrients. Or put it in, if you have a pile of leaves and stuff that you're trying to turn into soil, I would throw it in with that.
Okay.
Your mulch bit. Yeah, go ahead. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. It's, this happens in the, we get these questions a lot of times when we do lawn shows, and it's typically that the person's dog or dogs go, and they go in the same place over and over again, and then you've got to run some water in there or just dig it up. Chris and Nina, it's your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about 6 to 8 years ago, I planted a couple of Nishiki willows outside our patio, and I love them because of the spring foliage. But they have gotten to be so tall, and I've had to cut them down every year, that I'm looking for something as pretty in the spring, but maybe that doesn't get any more than about 4 feet tall.
Okay, a plant that's pretty in the spring.
And this is the willow that has the variegated foliage, is that correct?
Correct, yes. And it's beautiful, but it's just gotten to be, it could go grow 10 or 12 feet tall. I do not want it that large.
They can become small trees, yes. I would look at maybe a Weigelia. They have some, I don't know the cultivars right offhand, but I know they have some ones with similar variegation. Leaves will be a bit bigger. Again, they will be slower growing, but those will probably, if you're looking for about a 4-footer, those will probably top out around that size. And they have the added benefit of flowering in early summer. So there's a perk there as well.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I have one of those in the front, so they probably look pretty there, too, and they just don't get so large. Great, thank you.
Sure thing. Thanks a lot. Susie in Scandinavia, we'll turn to you next. Hi, what's on your mind?
Good afternoon. I've taken many a nice walk through Allen Gardens when my daughter was a horticulture major at UW-Madison.
Cool.
It was a every time to Madison stop. It was wonderful.
Wonderful.
A question about bringing plants in. We're very soft-hearted, and when our potted plants are doing wonderfully, when frost comes in the fall, we can't resist when we bring them in. we like to bring them back the next spring. We have real good luck with geraniums, but my question is, what about tuberous begonias? Is this something you do at the garden ever, and how how long should we wait before we harden off the bulbs toward bringing them back in the spring, and how should we do it?
And you said these are the tuberous begonias, correct?
Tuberous begonias, sure.
Once the sort of foliage has died back and you dig those bulbs, or dig the tubers, I should say, probably overwintering in a fairly cool, dark location, again, a basement or a root cellar type of situation. As far as getting them back out in the spring, I would, if you have a sunny windowsill or something like that, you can probably pot them up in maybe April, sometime in there, give them a little bit of a jump start. I would say by early to mid-May, you can start bringing them out, hardening them off a little bit, and they should be able to go out by mid-May.
How long do the bulbs, should they reasonably rest? Our problem is ours are blooming indoors right now. How should we harden them off, and how long should they rest?
You know, if they're still rolling indoors, you probably don't need to worry about having them go dormant in this case. I would just continue to deadhead them. And another thing to watch is maybe if they start to look a little leggy, rather than digging up the bulb and overwintering them, just leave the plants up. But if they start to look a little leggy, maybe just nipping off the ends a little bit, which will help to keep them bushy, and just doing a little bit of minor detailing work there.
I see. So,
We lost her. sorry. Sometimes that happens. Well, we lost her. Let's go to Robert in Paddock Lake. Hi, Robert. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you. I appreciate you taking the call.
Sure.
I've got a question. I like, gardening, perennial, and, of course, everybody's favorite vegetable gardening. But my problem is this. I live in a place where, given about three-quarters of an acre, there's about 60 walnut and oak trees. So pretty much I have no sunlight unless I'm out by the water, and there's no room to put a garden out there. And I love gardening so much, I want to try and get creative. And I thought I would build a greenhouse and do this while there's no leaves on the tree. And that being, I've got four window panels that are 4 foot by 8 foot. And I was thinking about building a greenhouse and putting together a green, something I can grow it there in the wintertime. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but what are your thoughts on that? And how do you think I can regulate that temperature so it doesn't freeze? I'm going to lift it up off the ground.
And you said you had black walnuts there, too?
I got black walnuts, lots of them.
All right. So if you're going to grow anything like tomatoes, you're going to have have them growing in pots.
Yeah, that's the idea. I can't grow it outside because it's too cold. So I can't grow it during the sun, the summer or springtime because there's no way to get sunlight through those trees. And the house is too small to grow it inside, so I was going to build this greenhouse and stick it out there, run some electrical cords, those heated cords that maybe keep the ice off the house, and put them on the bottom and, build it in boxes. But do I have to keep that temperature up, or will the windows itself keep it warm enough with the sunlight that I get? Is it even practical?
If we're looking at doing this particularly for winter growing, definitely maintaining the temperature, I think, will be critical, especially if you're using... I like the idea of using some recycled materials in there, but again, they probably won't have maybe the insulation value of a commercial greenhouse supply. So that's maybe... It may operate more like a cold frame than a true greenhouse per se. You may not be able to get away with tropicals unless you really keep that heat up and humidity up. But if you're looking to maybe just do some salad greens or some cool season crops or things like that, or things that can tolerate a little bit of being chilly, that again, those heating cords and some some sunlight and a south or west exposure might work for you. But again, with the, if you had a little bit of soil for to get over that black walnut issue, that might work. Depending, it just depends on what your ultimate goal is for what you want to grow.
Yeah. Well,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, what were you planning to grow?
You know, just probably lettuces, tomatoes, maybe some pepper plants. Anything just to keep some greenery growing in the wintertime. I mean, in the summer it's pretty tough, but you know, the spring, simple stuff. You know, it's only going to be about 10 foot long, maybe, 5 foot wide, something small.
Yeah.
But my thing was about keeping the temperature regulated or with the sun actually provided. And you answered my question. I gotta somehow figure out how to keep it insulated and build up the humidity. But
yeah,
it's trying to be creative when you normally couldn't do that.
Yeah, and you're going to have trouble with some of the plants like tomatoes and, unless you can really keep it warm. And peppers, too. Peppers do not like cold. So,
what temperature do you think I need to try and get it to?
For the peppers and tomatoes, I mean, I would say, again, I don't know for sure, but it's going to have to be upwards of the 70s, I'm thinking. The greens would be the easiest thing, I think, to do. And from what you're describing with the window panes, it sounds like you may be looking at more of a cold frame type of situation that maybe gets down to 40 at night and up to in the 50s, maybe 60s during the day.
A lot of cold season plants.
Oh, yeah, you could do onions and some spinach and greens, and there's a lot of, some cool season things that could happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Check it out. I'm going to get creative. I'll let you know what happens.
All right. Yeah, please do, Robert. Appreciate the call. Oh, it's going to be fun to hear how that turns out. We have an email from Julie who said, I heard you're planning a medicinal garden for the coming spring at the Allen Centennial Gardens. When would be the best time to visit?
I would say probably late June, beginning in late June. Everything should go in mid to late May, but just to give things a little time to get up to speed, anytime July forward, things should really be looking good.
And let's turn to Joan in Milwaukee next. Joan, hi. Thanks for calling.
I have two questions. One, a poinsettia plant that refuses to die. But the most important question is about my raspberries. I picked the last raspberries this fall last week, but now someone said the big canes you should cut back, and all of the vines, there are lots of big vines single, and then they droop down and the raspberries are at the far end of them. What should I do preparing this bed for next year?
Whoever told you those old canes could come out were correct. Again, with these raspberries, sort of taking out that older growth first, maybe the 2 to 3 year old, big, heavy, woodier growth, the plant should bloom and fruit on most of them, I believe, are second year wood. So any of the canes, I would definitely leave the younger shoots in there, but the taking out those bigger, older, heavier canes will help to continue to, incentivize the plant to produce those younger shoots and flowering and fruiting.
And do that now?
Yep, that should be able to happen now.
Okay. And what is the story on poinsettia plants? I had one last Christmas, and I kept it because it was beautiful. I finally threw it out, but I just put the pot outside, and when I was sprinkling, once in a while it would get water, but it wasn't in a dark place, and doing the fall raking a few weeks ago, I thought, gee, I need to dump that. And I looked at this plant, and there are 7 small poinsettias, red poinsettias, growing on it. What happened to that plant?
A lot depends on the variety. The new varieties are much more likely to flower and color longer and come back much better than the old varieties. So what you may have, Joan, is one of the very newest varieties that's pretty hardy and it'll flower a long time.
Well, I know I didn't pay a lot for the plant. I don't know.
Yeah.
I
I got it at Trader Joe's or Aldi's or somewhere, and it was only a few dollars, but it was a beautiful plant last fall, and normally they say you have to put them in a dark place or something, and I just left it, and I think it's prettier than the ones I've bought this year.
Well, that's, you know what, that's pretty cool. It'd be nice to know the variety. If you remember where you got it from, because that's one that you'd want to get again.
Yeah. Well, I got one this fall this Christmas season that they had lots of them that are very big flowers and shiny. They look artificial. Mm-hmm. And I saw one that was smaller, and through the cellophane it looked a little duller. But that one looks, when I opened it up, the flowers are just very sad looking. They look like you ought to dust them off or something. Is that a different brand, or is there anything I can do to shoot some life into it?
Sounds like it's a different variety. Could well be a different variety. And if the leaves look healthy, if they're if they're not wilted or limp, and they appear healthy except for the color, there's probably not a lot you could do. At least that'd be my opinion, Ben.
Mm-hmm. That's what I would think.
Well, maybe I should put that one out and keep the old one.
I think you got the idea. I think, Joan, you have hit on the best solution, or you may have hit on the best solution. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Good to hear your voice. Thanks for calling.
Right.
Joan calls from time to time. She's a nice gal. Pam in Madison, thanks.
Hi,
for calling.
Fall bulbs on sale. I was wondering if it was too late to force them for indoor use after Christmas. And no. How you would do it.
Not at all. You can definitely still do that. The critical thing is to look to make sure that those bulbs have not dried out. A lot of times, especially if they're maybe in big box stores or something, someplace in dry air, they may look a little crinkly and kind of dried up. And the type of bulb to look for, those nice plump bulbs that sort of look like they just came out of the ground almost, those will probably be the ones that'll force for you. Starting them at this point, it's hard to know whether or not they'll bloom by Christmas or New Year's, but they will bloom eventually. And the best thing to do is sort of set them in a container of some sort where just the very bottom of the root has access to water. And whether you do this in pebbles or stones, or you actually just set them in soil, either way will work. But as long as that bottom plate of the bulb has access to water, it should work. And also, of course, warmth. So they'll need to be indoors to help force them to grow.
And thank you very much for calling, Pam. Appreciate it. Suzanne sent us a photo on our Facebook page and wondering what that type of grass, what is this type of grass? A very long grass. Someone suggested pampas grass.
I'm thinking it's a miscanthus, a type of maidenhair grass. Just from looking at the way it's spreading, the pampas grass would be in clumps most likely and would probably want more. Or if it's the wetland pampas grass, it would want to be in a wetter setting. I'm thinking this is a type of miscanthus.
Okay, yeah, she says we got them from a lady across the pond. I don't know if she means across the pond as in across...
In the pond?
Or from England.
Right, this is true, yeah.
That's the other, or maybe if it was near a pond.
Mm-hmm. If they were near a pond, this could actually be a pampas grass, which is a very aggressive grass. But again, seeing it growing in a drier spot, I don't know if it would be as successful there, so I'm thinking it's a type of miscanthus.
Well, Ben, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for being...
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Absolutely.
Love to have him. Ben Fuda is the new garden director at Allen Centennial Gardens, a member of the American Public Gardens Association. And again, for those who are interested, go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We've got a link to the gardens and to the gardens website. So love the garden. It's wonderful. Monday, we'll be talking about what to consider when buying computers and gadgets for yourself and others. So please stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.